This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare, Becker's Dental podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Paul Bernard. Paul is a senior vice president with Smile Brands. Smile Brands is one of the most respected names in the dental care world. Paul, we're thrilled to have you join us today. We're going to talk to you about sort of the world of dentistry today and what's going on and changes at COVID-19 and more. Can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Scott. My name is Paul Bernard. I'm the Senior Vice President of Analytics and Process Excellence for Smile Brands. I've got responsibilities for all of the big data and analytics, as well as our Center of Excellence Process Excellence team. And I am also functionally responsible for all of our patient financing.
And can you take a moment and give the audience just a little background on Smile Brands? Just tell us a little bit about it, about the company.
Sure. Smile Brands is a national dental service organization. We are in, 16 or 17 states. I've lost count, but we're all over the country. And we partner with affiliated dentists to provide excellent dental care.
And take a moment and talk about the current situation with dentistry and COVID-19. And whether ramping back up and what that looks like and feels like. A few thoughts there.
Sure. Well, it certainly doesn't feel like anything we've been through before. That said, I think dentistry on the whole has acquitted itself quite well during this crisis. I think we're sort of near the top of the emergence. So things are, at least for us on a national level, getting a little bit closer to normal, in quotes, but it's going to be a new normal. I think there's still some concern in the industry and some concern, I guess, nationally about a second wave and how that might impact us. But I think we're faring quite well in our field operations, and really, I think over the course of the last few months, we've done really well, and it's a tremendous source of pride for us individually as a company, but also I think for dentistry as a whole, the role it's played in helping stave off a greater disaster with respect to COVID.
Thank you very much. And you're always a pleasure to visit with an extremely centered leader. Take a moment and talk about dental industry consolidation. Do you expect it to ramp back up, continue, slow down? What's some of your sense of what consolidation looks like in the industry?
So depending on who you speak with, I think there's a range of share estimates in terms of how many DSOs and what the relative share is. We'd peg it around 15% consolidated, and we see over the next, sort of 3 to 5 years, we see that accelerating. I think the value proposition for affiliation with a large national dental service organization, I think the value proposition has proved itself out through the course of COVID, just in terms of buying power, the ability to move resources around where they're needed, the ability to source scarce PPE, and just general overall planning and execution skill sets. And so I think, the trend is going to continue. The industry has been consolidating for some time. I personally expect it to pick up a bit, particularly with potentially some larger deals in the offing.
Oh, fantastic. Is there any sense, when you look at data analytics, just a few things that you've learned over the years about data analytics and sort of the dental field? Are there a couple thoughts that pop out at you of things that observations you've made or trends that you see?
Yeah, I think it's a timely question. We've really had to lean heavily on our analytics during this crisis. I think for it may not be obvious, but to folks that are interested in data, the dental space offers a pretty rich landscape in which to operate. We have, because we're primarily a consumer-driven business, we have a lot of analytics around who our patients are, why they come to us, why they don't come to us, and what their consumption profiles look like, and obviously all of the subsequent financial impact of that. So I do think there's a lot of there are a lot of third-party service offerings out there from a software perspective that really can aid a DSO in better understanding not just kind of the surface level metrics and analytics, but really the in-depth, really broad and wide patient level understanding and motivations. So again, it's one of those I think core capabilities that as you get bigger in scale and as you invest more in technology and invest more in data and have a particular data strategy, it's something that the DSOs, the larger DSOs, can and are spending and investing in.
And ultimately have to be great at to manage their businesses and look at consumer preferences and understand what's needed, what's not needed, and how to succeed.
Yeah, I think that's right. To the extent that we grow geographically and we enter into new markets, our ability to understand not just the micro level, patient level factors, but also the macro and regional economy factors become very important. So we spend a lot of time threading together seemingly disparate data sets in order to create a story and a picture that we can operate our business with. And so we're very data-driven business, and we lean heavily on it, and it's served us well. And we continue to push for, you know, greater insight using things like machine learning and artificial intelligence and applications that rely on those technologies. And I think that as a trend for the industry, that's going to continue as well.
Thank you. And then, Paul, one more question. Long term, everybody needs dental care. Does that mean you're optimistic about the long term dental arena, or there are so many other factors at play that would temper that optimism? A couple thoughts, long term optimistic or not?
Yeah, long term, very optimistic. I think the COVID crisis has reinforced what many have already known, but maybe not widely talked about, which is the connection between your mouth and the rest of your body and your overall health. And so that's a message that, as an industry, we need to step up our efforts in terms of communicating. I think, you know, when 60% of Americans aren't visiting their dentist regularly, there's tremendous growth opportunity within that. And so as an industry and us as a DSO, you know, we need to be focused on activating people into care. And that's an area where I don't really feel that the industry the dental space in total has done well over the last 10 years, because I don't think those numbers have changed much. So you can either look at it and say, well, you know, it is what it is, and we're happy with 40% of people being in regular care, or we can take a much more consumer-driven, patient-driven approach, which is what we do, and as an industry, move to meet the patients where they are, right? Much more focused on patient experience, much more focused on convenience and availability, and that has all kinds of ramifications for how practices are run. Part of the exercise of COVID has been to force us to realize that Saturdays are really important for people, and, you know, extended hours are really important, and teledentistry is really important. So I think in the end, on balance, when you take all of those innovations and when you take a mindset that says I need to meet the patient where they are, I think it bodes well if the industry as a whole adopts that mindset and puts those strategies into effect.
That 60%, Paul, that doesn't see the dentist enough, what's the continuum of how often they see that? Like, what's the percentage that haven't been to a dentist in 10 years versus some that go once a year versus every 6 months? What does that look like, that 60%?
So it's a great question, and it's a question we spend a lot of time on. We like to say that, at least within our business, we have patients that have been with us, and a great deal of patients that have been with us for over 10 years. The challenge is that those patients tend to come to us every couple of years with an issue, as opposed to being in regular sort of hygiene maintenance mode. And, you know, ideally, we'd like to see more people being more proactive with their dental hygiene, but ultimately the consumer and the patients, they're the ones that are going to dictate that. And so we pride ourselves on being available for patients when they need us, however they need us, and getting them in the first time and conveniently taking care of all of their issues. So we see repeat patients, so we don't necessarily think of a retained patient as a patient that's coming to us every 6 months. For us, we have a tremendous amount of retained patients. It's just that the consumption profile looks more like they're coming to us when they have an episodic need, as opposed to constantly coming for regular routine hygiene. And we have both, which isn't to say that we don't have a lot of retention in our hygiene and just standard oral care business, but we tend to make sure that we're available for them when they need us, however that shows up.
It's fascinating. And let me ask you another question. I apologize for so many questions, but it's actually so interesting. The 60% that don't do the regular oral hygiene but come for an episodic reason, in general, if a patient comes regularly for their hygiene needs and so forth, they tend to have better outcomes. They tend to be healthier in the long run. Is that a fair statement or is that an overstatement?
Well, I'm not a clinician, right? So I'm going to put an asterisk next to my answer. I think, generally speaking, yes, coming for regular oral hygiene and maintaining sort of a regular routine relationship with a dentist is best for your long-term health. So yes, I would agree with that. So the question becomes, okay, as an industry, if you believe the 60% number, it's not my number, it's one that you know, it's some of one of these macro numbers that circulates around the industry. But if you believe it, then why can't we get people to understand, one, that connection, and two, why can't we structure our operations in order to be able to satisfy and to increase that number? And I think some of it, quite frankly, has to do with convenience, affordability, and those things that patients, ultimately consumers, value, right? So we haven't created a compelling enough set of offerings as an industry to keep people fully engaged in their oral health, right? And so trust me, when you have a hot tooth or a cracked tooth, you're going to get in to see the dentist. And you want to get in immediately and you want to be seen. We've got some work to do, I think, in terms of figuring out how we get patients to routinely think of preventative maintenance when it comes to their oral health.
One more question. When people, economics, are most people paying for their own dental care? Is most of it through dental insurance or is some of it through Medicaid? What's the mix of what you tend to see out there?
Well, I think it's going to vary depending on your demographic, right? But our demographic at Smile Brands is pretty much down the center of a normal distribution, right? And so we see about 40 to 50% of patients actually maybe a little bit north of that, maybe 50 to 60 have some form of dental insurance. We also offer, for patients who do not have dental insurance, we offer a discount plan that we're pretty proud of that we think is ultimately probably more competitive economically for patients to take advantage of. But certainly when you compare dentistry to the medical side, it is a far less insurance-driven enterprise. It's far more of a consumer-driven enterprise. And so if you're thinking about, you know, what are we competing with as an industry in terms of the wallet, the patient's wallet, we're probably competing with a lot more non-healthcare spending choices than on the medical side, right? And so to that end, we have to be much more compelling in our activation and in our marketing and in our education, quite frankly, than you might on the medical side.
Fascinating. That's sort of what I'm trying to understand. Fascinating. So 40-50% basically paying themselves, 40-50% some kind of coverage. And it depends, of course, on the demographics of the community you're serving with any specific practice, where it might be and so forth. Paul, just literally, I apologize for keeping you longer than 10 minutes, but so interesting, and I learned so much every time I visit with you, so I appreciate it so much. Thank you again, Paul Bernard, for visiting with us today and for Smile Brands joining us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you for advocating and for putting out some really great content for folks to tap into.